Thank you. Good to be here with you. Seen many old friends here. Visualize for the moment a country in the world where the payment system does not exist, where you cannot use your credit cards, your debit cards, your checkbooks, you can't use an ATM machine, and you can't go to the bank to get money. Visualize a country where the tax revenues are one-third of the level of expenditure, and they can no longer borrow either domestically or in the international markets. Visualize a country where the regions in the country are splitting apart from the center, where the central government has no control over these regional constituencies, where regional governors decide to establish their own foreign policies, economic policies, and increasingly even military policies. Visualize a country which has a military that has not been paid in 7 months, where they are losing control over the basic arms, and these are nuclear weapons, chemical weapons, biologicals. This is not science fiction. It is Russia today. We've been talking about the humane economy. I've just finished my 31st trip to Russia. I came back last week. We have an example there of what happens when we do not have the kind of economy that the speakers today and previous meetings have talked about as our ideal. And I know at the end, Bruce Bartlett will give you a good historical perspective of how things ought to work and how they are not. But we have a crisis in Russia that has not hardly been mentioned in the pages of the nation's newspapers with their preoccupation with Monica, but something it's likely to affect all of you. The payments crisis, which began on August 17th, was the point where the banks essentially collapsed. The banks in Russia did not operate as real banks. They operated just to, they had government paper, which they got artificially higher interest rates on. And when the government decided to allow the ruble to devalue, the banks instantaneously were bankrupt, and the settlements process dropped. Now, the settlements process is something that most of us take for granted. When you go to a store and you pay for your merchandise, the merchant clears the, whether you use a credit card or a check or whatever, through a bank. This happens daily, every place in the world. But just visualize for the moment where the settlements process stops for every individual, for every business. In a place like Moscow, there are many viable businesses, restaurants, shops, and so forth, which are, again, economically viable, but they can't make settlements. They have no way of paying their vendors. They have no way of paying their employees. The employees have no way of receiving payment. It's all just come to a halt. This means that people are being laid off very rapidly, and you're just seeing a very rapid, almost total economic collapse, and it'll get down to a very low level of economic activity. Many of us had worked for a number of years to try to help the Russians move to a market economy. Progress was being made. But for a number of reasons, and I'll try to get into a little bit of it today, this has not worked out the way we had hoped. The Russian budget. All of you understand that inflation comes from governments printing too much money, usually to cover budget deficits. Well, the Russians have actually had a very good monetary policy since 1995. Inflation levels were low, about 11%, high by our standards, but for a country in transition, not particularly high. The ruble had been quite stable against the dollar. But Russia depends almost exclusively for its earnings on exports of gas, oil, metals, timber, and so forth. Have you ever bought a manufactured item from Russia? Can you think of anything you've ever seen in a store that says made in Russia? I see a lot of things made in China, but you never see anything made in Russia. And there's nothing there you want to buy. I go to Russia frequently. As I mentioned, people say, Richard, will you bring me something back? Well, there's nothing to bring back except these little dowels and the lacquer boxes. There's nothing else you'd ever want to bring back. It's all junk. And unless you've been there, you don't understand their incredible ability to create junk. In fact, most of the businesses are value subtracted. So the only way they got... That's absolutely true. If you take a look at the total amount of raw material production and the prices, again, of all the oil, gas, grains, metals, and so forth on the world market, what these should go for, and you take a look at Russia's GDP, you see a gap. And the gap is Russian GDP is lower than the value of the things they produce. It's in that base of value-subtracting society. It was far worse under the end of the communist years, and things were slowly getting better. But you've got a situation where the government was trying to spend, at the guidance of our friends at the IMF, 14 to 15% of their GDP. The IMF measured their GDP estimate was about $460 billion. That compares, what are we now, Bruce, 8.7 trillion here? Yeah, we're almost 9 trillion here. The Soviet, or the, excuse me, Russian GDP is about 5% or less than ours. Their government is one of the world's small central governments, and most of us sort of applaud that. We say, that's great. Our central government's about 22% of GDP, 21% now, I guess. The Russian government was trying to spend 14 or 15%. Their tax revenues, however, in the first 6 months of this year, were about 8% of GDP. In September, tax revenues, it appears, fell somewhere between 3 and 5% of GDP. And they're still trying to spend at 15%. And, of course, nobody is going to loan them a dime unless the IMF comes through again. The IMF is in part responsible for this because it told them to increase tax revenues. They did not have a functional tax system. They did not have the kind of tax accountants, tax lawyers that we all take for granted. And there was no way of increasing the tax revenue because the Russian people are extremely adverse to paying taxes, and for good reason. And so when the IMF said collect more tax revenues, the tax authorities went out and started seizing businesses. Now, if you're an investor and you see tax authorities at random going out and seizing businesses, what do? You take your money out of the country. Foreign investment stopped. Much of local investment stopped. And I could go through, I could spend an hour just on the sins of the IMF. Well, okay, what's going to happen now with this budget? Given there's no possible way of the meeting coming even close to meeting their budget, again, the military has been unpaid. Even the KGB, which is now called the FSB, hasn't been paid in several months. It's bad when you don't pay your Secret Service. Pensioners don't get paid. The poverty outside the main cities is terrible. So the government will start printing more rubles. They all acknowledge this is going to happen. You're going to have ever-increasing rates of inflation. You have this regional crisis that I mentioned. Russia has 89 administrative regions, and there are a variety. They're sort of like our states, but they have a variety of different powers. Some are called semi-autonomous regions, semi-autonomous republics, oblasts, administrative regions. It's a mess. And the rules have never been worked out. What we decided in 1865 still has not been decided in Russia, what the powers of the regions are versus the power of the central government. As a result of the crisis in payments and the decline in tax revenue, there's been increasing tax fights between the regions and the central government. And this tension is built so that regions now start putting on export taxes, import duties, sort of the way the U.S. looked before the back at the time of the Articles of Confederation, or even far worse, actually. And it's a process which is unwinding, again, extremely rapidly. Then you have the control over the military. I'm going to read you something. This came in yesterday. On October 7th, Russia's Interfax news agency reported that customs officials in a Russian Far East city of Kazan had intercepted an attempt to sell 5mm Mi-18 assault transport helicopters to North Korea. The helicopters bore the identification numbers that indicated they were the property of the Russian army and were still fitted with weapons pods and other military equipment. The helicopters, valued at $300,000 each, were reportedly offered to the North Koreans for $20,000 each. Additionally, on September 29th, Russia's TASS news agency reported that a large amount of weapons had been stolen from the Russian Pacific Fleet ammunition dump between September 22nd and September 28th. According to initial estimates, more than 17,000 rounds of ammunition, several thousand stun grenades, 6 grenade launchers, 10 grenades were missing, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it goes on about all these thefts from Russian military installations. Now, just think about it. Those of you who've been in the U.S. military, you're a commander. You're sitting out there someplace in Siberia or Central Russia or whatever. You have 50,000 troops under your command. They haven't been paid. They're not getting food. They're not getting medical aid. What do? Well, you start selling stuff. And if you're a loyal commander, what do you start off with? The trucks, you know, the more commercially oriented things. And then you start off with the light arms. You start working up. Next thing, it's tanks, heavy artillery. And at some points, it's the nukes, it's the chemicals, it's the biologicals. I was with some senior members of the Duma, and one of the leaders of the Russian left in the Duma, articulate man. He considers him part of the left, but he doesn't sound a whole lot different than a lot of the folks here because he is so scared these days. And he said to me, Richard, the problem isn't so much the nukes, it's the chemicals. People don't realize that how many chemical weapon stocks we have, how lightly they're guarded, how they're getting out of control. And the Russian leadership, almost across the board, understands if things aren't done quickly, these stocks are going to end up in Libya, in Iraq, and other places that we don't want them. Again, virtually no mention in the news of any of this. We also see the flight of human capital out of Russia. When I was in Moscow last week, there was a survey in one of the Russian newspapers. 22% of the people say they're now actively trying to get out of the country. Another 18% said they're considering it. Only 60% of the people said they intend to stay for the moment. Can you visualize what is going on when that portion of the population, we're talking the country of 150 million people, the only sources of stability really now are the fact that Russians a long time ago gave up depending on government. It was always ironic to hear the world's most complete communist state and where the people had the least faith in government. Of course, we've seen that tendency as government grows, people have less and less faith for good reason. But in Russia, the situation has gotten to the point, it's been that way for 20 years, the end of the communist period and the post-communist period, that people go out there and they grow their own potatoes, their own cabbages, and put away winter stocks in their little garden plots. And most of them own these plots now. They were basically given to them in the 90, 91, 92 periods. And in most years, they're able to grow enough food. Unfortunately, this year, there was a large drought in southern Russia that affected many people. So many people have not been able to raise the amount of potatoes and cabbages and other things they need to get through the winter. In fact, this morning on the news, there was an item that the Russians have now formally asked the European Union for food help, and they're going to send a delegation to Washington next week to ask for food help, because if they don't get it, a number of people are going to be very, very hungry by the end of the winter. The Russians, because a long time ago they lost faith in their own government, in their own currency, hide a great number of dollars. As you know, most dollar bills that are produced, particularly $100 bills, go outside the country and are used throughout the world. But the Russians have the world's biggest stock of these. Nobody knows exactly how many. And the estimates go from a minimum of about $40 billion stuffed in the mattresses up to maybe $150, $160 billion in the mattresses. And I think it's probably around $100 billion or a bit more, because every Russian I know, every place has dollars, and they keep it outside the banking system, which enables them to get through some of these hard periods. Now, also Russians, for many years, have been keeping bank accounts outside Russia. This is illegal. I was told yesterday by a deputy finance minister of Russia that last year only one person applied for the license to have a foreign bank account. I think every Russian I know has a foreign bank account. What you see here is the whole breakdown of law, the kind of more of the Anglo-Saxon tradition we have going back to England, and this notion of the rule of law does not really exist in Russia. And what many of us were confusing with capitalism, particularly the Russians were confusing with capitalism, was not capitalism as we know it. There was no rule of law. When you were talking about Repke and the idea of how government has to establish the rules of the game, here you had a situation where there were no rules. Bribery was rampant. One reason they got so little in terms of taxes, it was far easier just to bribe the tax officials. There was no tradition that a civil society has to pay some taxes. And so the situation continues to get far, far worse. Now, what are we going to do about it? We could say, well, you know, the Russians, they were the communists, they were enemies. We can just ignore them. After all, we ignore a lot of other countries around the world that get in deep economic trouble, a lot of places in Central Africa. But there is a problem with Russia. And the problem is that they have these nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. And if we allow the Russian state to totally collapse, what's going to happen? If we do nothing, you can almost see what's going to happen. Increased rates of inflation, increasing breakdown of the central government. The government will try to pay off its ruble debts in deflated rubles. And the central will continue to lose control. You'll have what I call the rise of sloppy fascism. In a number of these Russian regions, you'll have somewhat authoritarian rulers who will try to put down the boot somewhat. It's hard to do in Russia because the center has so been destroyed, and the military has so been destroyed, and the police forces, that the good news is of a Russian ruler orders somebody to shoot on the people, it's very unlikely this is going to happen. But you get this movement towards anarchy, a very, again, sloppy fascism, what I call it. So question is, what are we going to do? Are we going to give them some food aid? I would say yes, just as humanitarians, like we do any other place in the world, we ought to give them some food aid. But what are we going to do about this economy? And the reason I'm concerned about, again, is the loss of control, the command and control structure over the weapons. And a number of us have advocated that they move more towards a currency board type of situation. I've advocated in the past, in some of my publications, that we ought to provide them with U.S. government bonds collateralized by their own resources. And people will say, well, they may default. That's true, they may default. But at least if we did that, it's only a balance sheet item. It's an asset liability which offsets. It's no cash outlay. If we gave them the bonds, then they ought to be able to raise the money in international financial markets. And that is a way of them getting money in to pay some of the current bills and reestablish their currency. If I had more time, I'd go through the mechanics of that. We need to press them right now to solve the payments crisis, which can be solved by allowing any Russian to use any currency they want in any bank in the world. They have access to the internet, to telecommunications. You don't have to physically go to the bank to have a bank account. Legalize what many of them are already doing. There's a lot of smaller banks in Russia which then would tend to pick up and start operating like normal banks. The big banks are virtually all destroyed, but these smaller banks could reestablish payments mechanisms quite quickly. That could be done. We need to encourage that, and saying the aid is conditional upon them doing that as a temporary measure, just again, using any currency, just getting the system going again. Finally, something which may sound like a little bit more radical notion, but we had done it in the Ukraine, and we've done it elsewhere in the world, and that's starting to buy Russian weapons in a big way, particularly a lot of the obsolete ones, the obsolete nuclear ones, these chemicals, these biologicals. And you say, well, why should we use U.S. taxpayer money to buy old Russian weapons? Well, it's better that we buy them than Saddam Hussein or somebody else. spending more money there on environmental cleanup. It's an environmental catastrophe, and this is a way of getting some money into the economy because Russia was making progress, and we need to buy more time. Estonia, Poland, the Czech Republic have gotten basically through the transition. Russia is making progress. The situation there was far worse. And if we can buy them another 5 years, help them get through that, we have a chance of having a real democratic, reasonable market-oriented economy and country. You don't teach people a humane type of capitalism, the market system that we have here in Western Europe, in 5 years. And again, those of us who watched it have seen the progress. And if we do nothing, we're going to regret it, because you just start looking at the scenarios for awful things to happen. And I realize this is not a policy group, but I do urge you to try to get your elected representatives and people in the news media to focus a little bit more on Russia and less on some of the other things that are happening, because it's going to be critical to your futures. If Russia goes down, if some of these nukes or other things get out, you can imagine what that would do to the world economy, let alone the lives of the people directly affected by it. Thanks so much.